The following presentation was recorded at the 1999 Teachers Workshop at Faith Builders. More information on Faith Builders events at fbep.org.
Those of you that don't know me, I'm Brandon Mollett, originally from Napa, Indiana, working here at Faith Builders. Spent the greater part of my life in Napa. Anybody from Indiana here this morning? Okay, well, blessings to you. I met my wife Marie there in Indiana, and we lived there we lived there for over 10 years, and I grew up there. God has been very good to us, and I want to just say here at the outstart that Christian education has been an important part of my life. I attended Christian school for all but two of my 12 years in school, and I teach at Faith Builders Christian School here in the Christian Day School that we have. Let's just think about the kinds of schools that we have. Faith Builders Christian School could be called an independent school because we do not, we don't come under a particular church except our church fellowship that we have here. And, of course, I'm accountable to Melvin Lehman, who's the director at Faith Builders. And, of course, he then is accountable to the board of the large organization of Faith Builders. So it's a little unique situation. In my school at home, the school there was directly supported by four different churches. There was several Mennonite churches and several Beachy churches that worked together. They worked together for over 25 years at that Christian school. Just in the last 4 or 5 years now, we came to a point where we had to add on to the school or else divide. And so since the community had been slowly spreading out and there have been a few more churches had come into the support group there, there was a division largely according to geographical location. So there's still a lot of working together. But where there was one school, now there is three. And just talked to a friend recently. He had a teacher in service, and all three schools had a teacher in service together. So there's still a lot of cooperation there. But that school had a board, and each church nominated a board member for sometimes a three-year, if there were four, there was a four-year term. There for a while, it was a five-year term. And those terms were, of course, 5 years, and then the school treasurer was on for three-year terms, but he could be reelected three times. So usually he was on for 9 years at a time. In fact, they all were on for 9 years at a time, just to provide some continuity there on the financial side. How many of you come from a church-supported school or on a board of a church-supported school? Right. Any schools that would be just an independent parent body, let's say, that got together and nominated school board members and runs a school. Anybody like that? Okay. Those are probably the two most common ways that Christian schools are managed. All right. Are any of your principals, I'm just curious here, are any of your principals responsible for signing the checks? Do they sign all the checks? Any principals in your school do that? Okay. One of the things we'll think about today in this workshop, and then later on, I think Melvin will address this a little bit too, is just how do you organize the school and who does what and what are the implications there? Well, organizations are rightfully judged by the people associated with them. And so who you are matters as a board member. And you bring who you are to the board. So a board is really only as capable as the combined talents or experiences of its members. And we talk about synergy. Synergism happens when the whole is greater than the sum total of its parts. In other words, we can accomplish more together than we can individually many times, because what I lack may be your gift, and what you lack may be my gift. And so together we can accomplish more even than the sum total of our parts, because working together as a whole. Well, and that's some of the delight
I believe, in working with the board. I just thoroughly enjoyed working with the board. One of the things that I noticed here was that I make a lot more decisions independently of a independent of a board. And whereas I might think, well, that's great, I can do what I want, but I also feel the added responsibility, because guess what? If something doesn't work, I get to do all that too, see? And so I have less people to pull ideas from, less people in support, and so there is a difference. And so there are some very, very positive things about working with the board. I want to basically answer one question today. What kind of person should a board member be? And that's what we want to look at, qualities of effective board members. And I want to look a little bit as well at several important considerations as we look at that board member. An effective board member is a 1 Timothy 3 man. I think it's remarkable or significant that 1 Timothy 3 says that if any man desires to be a bishop or an overseer, he desires a good thing. And here's the qualities he ought to exemplify, portray, demonstrate, characterize. Now, it's important to notice that this man demonstrates these before he's an overseer, before he's a bishop. So, I think those qualities should fit just as well on a school board. Because if they're not there, then that too becomes part of the image of the school. And so, what does 1 Timothy 3 say? He needs to be blameless, husband of one wife, vigilant, sober, good behavior, given to hospitality, apt to teach, not given to wine, no striker. Now look at all the issues that are brought to bear on this. Look at how he's going to handle conflict. Look at how he's going to handle relationships. Look at how he's going to handle a position of influence and authority. All that is brought to bear in this passage. He's not greedy. He's patient. He's not a brawler. He's not covetous. He rules his own house well. He has his children in subjection with all gravity. For if a man know not how to rule his own house, how shall he take care of the church of God? You can't get more fundamental than a man and his family. That's the bottom line. And so, moreover, he must must have a good report of them which are without. In other words, in the community. There needs to be a good testimony in the community, because if he's in the community and he has a lousy, excuse the word, testimony in the community, and if there are people there in town, people he does, you know, with whom he does business, and they don't think too much of how he does business or don't like how he, what kind of workmanship he has, and then they hear that he's on the board of his Christian school, instantly there's a label on that school, and they drive past that school, they don't think about the good people associated with that school, they think about the people who are not so good and associated with that school. And so I think it's very important that we consider a 1 Timothy 3 person on a Christian school board. Well, an effective board member does 7 things, and there may be more, but I just categorize them this way. He pursues righteousness. This person is persistent in pursuit of the right. And you know that as you go to work day in and day out, there are plenty of opportunities to become complacent, to become tired, to just become worn down in the pursuit of right. But this is extremely important. This person invests time in his personal walk with God. Just experienced this week again, a stressful week, more so than the couple before that. And I noticed that, and of course I knew this weekend was coming. And although we presented the same workshop in Hartwell, Georgia here a month ago, I realized as the week wore on that I was having a tougher time getting up in the morning. I normally get up 5:30, but I had a tough time getting to bed, which that's where it starts, you know. But I noticed that when I'm under stress, I have a tougher time getting up in the morning, which, of course, what is sacrifice? My quiet time at 6:30 just does not have the quality it has at 5:30, okay? And so this person must invest time. Maybe you have your quiet time in the evening. That doesn't work for me. It may for you. Whatever, whenever, wherever it happens, there needs to be an investment there, because my point is, in the example, I pay a price when I don't have that investment. Strong in his Christian world and life view. What do we mean by that? It's easy in our communities. We tend to become introverted in our communities, and we relate to church people. Unless you have a work or a business that pulls you out of that community, it's very easy to relate only to people in my church or other Christians in the community. Well, I need to be able to take what the Bible says, to take what God has taught me in my own relationship and walk with Him, and be able to translate that into my business, into my job, into my family. So when someone asks you, so what do you think about voting? Or so what do you think about the present condition of the presidency? Or what do you think about the impending use of ground troops in Yugoslavia, what they're talking about here in the last day or two? So what does the Bible have to say about that? What does the Bible have to say about child training? What does the Bible have to say about how we do business in our school? Are we going to loan money to build this addition, or are we going to wait until we have all the funds? Does it matter which way we go? What are the implications? All those factors demonstrate your ability to translate or to apply what Scripture says, what you believe to be true about God and the world and life, into the situations you may find. And so we need to work constantly on being able to have or articulate a Christian world and life view. An effective board member is swift to hear and slow to speak. This person can maintain confidentiality. We always said in our board meetings at home, you know, the minutes are open to anyone who wants to read them. However, not everything went into the minutes. Not that every issue discussed went into the minutes. But, for instance, names, especially on sensitive issues, did not go into the minutes. It's not important, necessarily, who, but it is important that you keep track of what issues were discussed and what was decided. However, as a board member, you have great potential to damage relationships in your community. And you know that often in our churches, you're related to a few people in church, you're very good friends with a few people in church, and it just becomes very important that you're able to maintain confidentiality. This person is able to articulate a biblical philosophy of education. This is important and probably overlooked, and this relates closely to being able to articulate a Christian world and life view. Well, do you know why it is that you have a Christian school? Do you know why it is that you look for certain kinds of people to teach in your Christian school? Do you know why you choose the curriculum you choose? Do you know why you allow some activities in your school and not others? Is there a foundation? Can you start from creation and move up and end on Tuesday in your Christian school? That's really the bottom line. That's what we mean when we say articulate a biblical philosophy of education. So I want to, if we have time, I'll present a few things on that at the end. Also have a handout on that if you'd like to have a handout. An effective board member attends school functions. He's visible. He's involved. He attends and wholeheartedly participates in board meetings. This was never a problem in our school. However, we did have one board member who, he only missed two or three times out of 2 years that I remember. However, I remember as principal, it just irritated me slightly because it was different. Almost never did we have a board member miss our meetings. And when one did, you felt it. And I was critical not because I didn't like the guy. I wanted his input, all right? And when he wasn't there, we felt it, all right? For some reason, he wasn't always there, and we missed him. And so I think it's extremely important that you attend and wholeheartedly participate. We also had a board member one time who was always there but seldom participated. He listened, and when the board chairman on some issues would go around and say, okay, I want each of you to say specifically how you feel. You always had the sense that he just was kind of a yes man. Well, now, he had ideas. I'm sure he did. And I know it's scary sometimes to say what we really think. However, we suffer when you don't say what you think. Because what was his contribution? Very little. On the contrary, I had one board member who often had a differing opinion, and I'll mention him later, and that was not necessarily a negative dynamic in the meeting. An effective board member, in addition to those seven things, demonstrates compatibility. This person fits in with the overall makeup of the board. Now, why is this important? I worked just in the 5 years that I taught and was principal at our school in Napanee, United Christian School. I worked hard at thinking about how we can recruit a really top-notch board. And I know this is difficult in our communities because we like to pass things around. We like to give people an opportunity. And it was true that once a person spent 4 or 5 years on a board, he left that board much more informed and aware of the Christian school and usually left a staunch supporter of what we did there. We knew that when he left that board, we could count on that person in all the different conversations you have, school business meetings. You leave with that person leaves an asset to your program. Well, you know, I mentioned the person who didn't contribute very much, and it seemed like the board went in cycles. Sometimes we had all self-employed type people on that board, self-starters, motivated people, people like to who had some vision, had some goals, wanted to do things well, worked well with people, were used to working with people. And they contributed to that board in a very strong way. And other times the board seemed to be comprised of, hey, they're good people. I'm not making a statement on their testimony, on their value to the community, but they were more quiet, laid back, might have a 6-to-3 job, and showed up for work today, were faithful, good men. However, their contribution, when you had an entire board comprised of those kind of men, it seemed to be less forward motion in the program of the school. And I felt the weight. I felt like I had to push harder to really get things done. And so I often wished I had a board that was a good mix, because these men who were often more quiet, laid back, they had something to offer. And they often are the steady plotters, we call them sometimes. Men who are just there, they're faithful, consistent. They want to do things right, and they are concerned about maintaining a consistent testimony, where sometimes your self-starter, motivated types, they just get out and do it. And sometimes there's conflict. Sometimes there's, they rustle the waters a little bit, and we need them. But they're balanced by the more consistent types. So I wished we had more of that. And so I came up with a sheet comprised of a lot of what I'm sharing with you today. That I ask our ministers if we couldn't post that in the back of the church on a bulletin board and maybe even announce it, go over it with the congregation in the 30 days that the Constitution required to nominate a board member, and ask people just to consider, okay, here's who's on the board. Now you think and pray about this. Who would be a good person in our congregation to fit with this present board? Can we think about that? And I'll just be honest, you know, I felt we had mixed results. Now, we only did the last 2 or 3 years I was there. But I believe we need to give serious consideration to the kinds of people we put on the board. We want people that work well together. This person also has strength of conviction. And let me talk about the gentleman I referenced earlier. He was a man who was able to say what he thought, and was also able to support completely the final decision of the board. And I admired that. We would go around the board meeting, and he would we came to him, and he would say, you know, I think I need to say how I feel about this. I want you to understand that I'm not trying to create dissent here, but I do need to say how I feel. And he might say something that was in complete disagreement with what 3 or 4 other men had just said. Okay? But the spirit in which he said it and the purpose with which he said it demonstrated clearly that he was simply stating what he felt. And he would then say, but I do want you brothers to feel completely free to do what you think needs to be done. And when we came to the final vote, up and down vote, he would often vote in agreement with the decision that was completely against his. Not because he agreed, but because it didn't violate his conscience to do it, and he wanted the decisions to be unanimous. I had other board members who felt it was important, for whatever reason, on issues that were not that significant. It was discussed, hashed in the meeting, finally we come to the vote, and one man, he thinks he has to vote in opposition. Okay, now what does he accomplish? Primarily, he can go back to his people and say, well, I didn't vote for that. What else did he accomplish by voting against it? Nothing, really. He still had to support the final decision because he was on the board, and whatever that was, he was working for that, but he had voted against it. Accomplished nothing. Much better, in my opinion, to be able to say what he thought, and if it didn't violate his conscience, to be able to say, gentlemen, I stand with you on this, okay, and I'm going to support it. So, strength of conviction. This person exudes enthusiasm. It's important that this board member can be excited about the program of the school. And if you're not, you need to do something to get that way. A couple suggestions: that you do some reading on Christian education. You talk to some people. Maybe it means you want to do lunch a few times with the administrator to find out what his vision is and what his heartbeat is for the school. Maybe a few parents that you know are really strong supporters. Maybe you need to spend some time with them and just find out why they believe so strongly in what's happening. And I believe that you can catch the excitement. An effective board member needs to have good judgment. Well, how do you have that? Well, you need to know God, for one thing. You need to have good relationships with people. Experience helps. And it's just a process that requires humility and persistence and a listening ear to those around you and a real sense that you want what God wants, and you begin to hear in your own heart and mind what you believe God has in mind for the school. An effective board member may have specialized expertise. Notice he does not have to have. Sometimes we think that if we're going to put on an addition, then we need to have, five good contractors on the board while we do this building program. I'll grant you, we need to pull on those resources. We may not necessarily need a board comprised of contractors to do that. We might need a couple. But this person may have specialized expertise. You don't necessarily need a writer to take your minutes. We had one whose grammar was terrible, okay, the secretary of the board. His grammar was terrible, but he found someone, and when we voted him in, he said, gentlemen, he says, I'm not a writer. And so he found someone who could go over those and just bring them up to speed on grammar and spelling and present them, and it worked very well. And he did well in that area. Let me just give some important considerations as you consider these qualities of effective board members. One of the things that you'll find is that you can work continually at improving your contribution to the board. And it's not something that just kind of happens. Certainly, I want to underscore that what I said at the beginning is that you bring who you are to the board. And so that is there. We can't change that overnight. But there are some things that we try to do to increase the effectiveness of these men that came on the board. One of the things that we developed was a board member orientation. And this was conducted by the board chairman and by the principal. And so one of the things we did, the board chairman met with this person and they talked over a board meeting procedure and some expectations and talked about things like the person really needing to be able to contribute, and they wanted to hear his opinion. Even though most board members came on saying, hey, you know, I don't know too much about this. I hope I can help, but I'm not too sure how much I can help. And we always want to assure that person that they could help tremendously, give them some ideas on how they could help. We had assigned reading, and I'm listing three titles there. We had them read the first one that you see there, Serving God on the Christian School Board, by Roy Lowry. And Roy Lowry has been one of the pioneers in the Christian school movement, just passed away here a couple of years ago. I had the privilege of hearing him speak several times and visiting with him. One of the things that stands out about Dr. Lowry is his commitment to people in the midst of developing a program. He was headmaster for a number of years down here in Delaware at, I can't remember the name of the school anymore. It's probably on here somewhere. Delaware County Christian School. And board members read this book, and it has titles in it like The Board Principal Relationship, A Job Definition for the Principal, How to Select Board Members, Major Responsibilities of the Board, some things on structure, things on duties of board committees, Relationship of the Board with Faculty, Staff, Parents, and Students, Solving Problems, The Place of the Bible and Prayer on the Board, and Blessings of Serving on the Board, Marks of a Quality Board, Ethics and Standards, What Principals Look for in a Board. This is a very well-written, highly readable style. You know, you can read a complete chapter. Others, you can just browse and pick out things. It's easy to read, and we recommend it very much. Here's a book that just came out, a Nonprofit Board Answer Book, and this has a really some really good things on selecting board members. Again, very readable, some nice charts, things in there that you from which you can benefit. Another one that I have mentioned there, Doing Good Better, published by Good Books, and written by a couple board members of Habitat for Humanity. And so they write from some very good perspectives. Again, not a big book, but very helpful. Something else we ask our board members to do was attend board member conferences, and that's why I was just delighted to see you all here today. ACSI also does some good things with board conferences. There are other organizations as well that if you stay alert and try to find them, they're there. That was the orientation. Something else that I did with the board, every year I would go over, I had a sheet that I handed out to the board, and we would, let me see if I can find my overhead here, we would discuss this sheet, and every September I asked the chairman if I could go over this sheet with the board. And I had it, each board member had a sheet, and we just talked about these things. One of the things that happened, the first year I was teaching, and I was young and inexperienced, and we had a discussion one time about salaries. And, you know, I was working anywhere from 10 to 12 hours a day, teaching full time, and we had about 110 students maybe at that time. And, working on being principal of the school and trying to do all that that required. And I had a fellow teacher who was getting paid just about $1,000 or $1,500 less than what I was. And he worked there maybe 7 hours a day, seven or eight. Okay. Well, you know, I'll admit to my immaturity in asking the board to think about that discrepancy. And I didn't think I complained too much, but I did ask the question. I said, you know, I put a lot more time into this guy, and he makes just about as much as I do. Well, that was the last time the board discussed salaries in my presence. Now, that's not so bad. The problem was they never said a word to me about why they didn't. Okay? Now, I decided that summer, it was a conspicuous absence, by the way. Okay? And I decided that summer, you know, there's a couple things that need to change in our relationship. The benefit I had was that the 6 months prior to my beginning to teach there,
I sat on the board meetings along with the principal who was going to be leaving. And I, being in the community, I heard the discussions about that man. He was a good man. But I heard the discussions about him, things people didn't like about him. But I sit in the meeting, and those issues that come up, nobody would address it. Everybody just kind of slide around it, except that a couple people would always make a few snide remarks under their breath about, oh, for instance, one thing he liked to do was he liked to go up to Pizza Hut and bring in pizza for the, about once a month, he'd bring in pizza for everybody in high school, okay? Or every so often, he would take them all out to McDonald's for lunch. Okay, well, granted, it may have been a bit much. The trouble is, instead of talking about it, very simple, he was a very open man. They just made snide remarks about it, but never addressed it until all of a sudden, he overheard one in a board meeting. And he said, what was that? He's a very direct person, which maybe is why they were scared to talk about it. But he said, what was that? And so there it came out on the table. Well, I saw that communicating between board and principal was going to be hard work and that it needed constant vigilance if it was going to be done well. So every September, I said, I want to go over this. And I went out for breakfast with my board chairman. And I said, look, that salary issue, let's talk about that. And I said, now, I'll just tell you how I felt about it. It made me feel like a child because no one had talked to me. You decided that I can't handle that discussion anymore. Now, all you would have to do was just say, hey, look, we don't think you're looking at this right. And I could have accepted that perfectly fine. But no one wanted to say that. They just decided to stop. And so we talked about those issues. And out of that, I developed this from the book I just talked about and some other sources. And I said, this is an important relationship. It's one of faith. Faith that God wants me as principal of the school and faith on my part that God wants you to be a board member. It's a relationship of service. I'm here to serve the school and the parents and the students. And you're here as well to serve the board. I mean, to serve the parents and the students and the teachers. It's one of prayer. I said, I want to pray for you. I need your prayers. It's one of commitment. Are you committed to me as a person or just as long as things are going well in the school? As long as you agree with me, you're committed to me. Or are you committed to me even when things aren't going well, even when I'm not doing well and I need to be discipled or whatever the case may be? Second thing I said is the board must be able to have confidence in the principal. Now, I have a handout here if you want this. If you don't want to write all this down, I can give you a handout. If that confidence is not there, something must change, the board or the principal. Well, let's be honest about this. If you don't have confidence in me as a principal, then we need to talk about it. If I don't have confidence in you, then I need to talk about that as well. Something needs to change, you or me. Then I talked about expectations. I said, here's what you can expect from me as the principal. I said, you can expect spiritual leadership of the school. You can expect philosophical leadership. I'm going to be talking about why we do what we do, and I want to be working on helping others see why we do what we do. Academic leadership. I'm going to be working with teachers and looking at using good curriculum and helping students achieve what they need to achieve. I said, you can expect me to keep you informed. One of the things I did, every month I went out for lunch with the board chairman, and we developed the agenda. And we talked through the whole agenda. We talked through any issues that we wanted to talk about. And if a parent called me, or let me say it this way. If a student, let's say I had an incident with a student that was particularly intense and perhaps potentially destructive, or you know, I didn't know how it was all going to turn out, I often gave my chairman a call that night. And I said, hey, let me just tell you what happened today in school. And, you know, I'd like for you to pray about it. I just want to tell you what happened. That way, if you hear anything, you already know my side of it. And, you know, you can deal with it how you wish. But here's what happened. I said, you can expect respect from me as an employee. I said, I work for you. You hired me. I'm going to respect you in that way. I said, you can expect me to receive reproof. And one of the reasons this was important, because I had seen a principal in that school who had not received reproof. And I knew the destruction that it brought on everybody, and it was important to me to do that. One of the things the board told me when I left was they appreciated the fact that they could tell when I didn't agree, which I didn't realize they could that well. But they said they appreciated the fact that I didn't develop it into a full-blown conflict of any type. Confidentiality. I said, you can expect me to keep the right things confidential. You can expect me to work within the budget. You can expect me, by the grace of God, to have good judgment. Does that mean I'm perfect? No. But it means that I'm going to work very hard to have good judgment. And it's my job to make the faculty successful. Second part of that sheet that I wanted to go over was, here's what I would like to expect from you. Here are the things that would really mean a lot to me. Number one was protection. I got this illustration from John Maxwell, who would tell his board, you know, you carry two buckets around this organization, one with water, one with gasoline. And when small fires ignite, you can use one or the other. You have a choice at that moment. When someone comes and complains about something, or when you hear something that happened at school, you have one of two choices. You can dump a little water on it and take care of it. You can add a little fuel to the fire, and we can soon have a full-blown problem. Tremendous impact on the success of the school. We had, as I said, four churches involved, and in addition to each of the board members, a minister from each church sat in on that board as well. And it seemed inevitably, and this relates to the orientation as well as the relationship with the principal, inevitably that new board member, bless his heart, no fault of his, but would come to one of those first board meetings. He says, I have a few things I need to present. So whenever the chairman would say, do you have anything to add to the agenda? They all had the agenda a few days in advance of the board meeting, but we would give opportunity to add any new items. And they say, yeah, I have a few things. We get to this item on the agenda, and you say, well, I had a person talk to me, and he thinks that we're not, that one of the teachers didn't do the right thing right here. Okay. Well, that's one of the things that we had talked about in that breakfast I had with my chairman. And it was written in the school handbook. You know, it's there. But this is how we are as people. And so that board, I felt very supported, because that board, they sat and they listened to the man's complaint that he was relaying from a minister in his church. And they said, you tell Brother So-and-so that he needs to set up a breakfast time with Brandon. And they need to meet and they need to talk about this. If they can't get anywhere with that issue, then the board will consider it. But first of all, he needs to talk to Brandon, because the problem was he had a problem with the way I did a certain thing. Well, we met twice, and I presented what we came up with to the board then later, and the board never had to discuss it. Now, it was a good thing, because what it caused me to do was reevaluate our awards program. That's what the issue was. Okay, and so it helped me think through why we did what we did. We modified it somewhat, took some of his suggestions, others we didn't, and he still wasn't totally happy about it, didn't agree with it, but he could support it. All right. Now, what that did, it brought the two of us closer together, because I always felt like he was watching a little critically. All right. It brought the two of us closer together, established our relationship, and improve the program, all right? And it saved the board time. We didn't have to be there as late that night, okay? So this is a tremendously important principle in the relationship between the board and the principal. One thing that I said I expect from the board is wise policies. That's one of the chief functions of the board, is to set policy. And so I said, I like to expect wise policies, and I was seldom disappointed. Open communication, and I gave the example of that salary issue But by going over this, it reinforced every year what our goals were, and it reinforced for both of us the importance of open communication and honor the organizational relationship. We always told parents, look, if you have a problem with something that's happening in your child's room, you need to talk to the teacher first. Don't come to the principal. Don't go to the board. You go to the teacher first. If you're not satisfied there, talk to the principal. And the principal will sit down with the parent and the teacher, if necessary, and work on the problem. If they still can't achieve satisfaction, the board will consider it. If the board couldn't achieve satisfaction, it went to the church. All right? So that pattern worked very well. We had few problems that we had to deal with, even on the board level. And I had very few problems I needed to solve with teachers, because by going to the teacher, most of those problems were solved. And so I believe that Matthew 18 principle is extremely important. I've been in some schools where people have said Matthew 18 doesn't apply to a Christian school and how it relates to parents and students and all that. I just disagree totally. Chief functions of the board. Determine the school's mission and purposes. Why are we here? What are we doing? Ensure effective planning. One of the things that was so helpful was to have a board who would go over, do we have classroom space? Do we have adequate funds? We have a budget meeting. I didn't even have to be at that budget development meeting. I could turn in my sheet of things, and they would hammer it out. And I really enjoyed that, because I didn't have to worry about all that. Set policy and delegate its implementation. One reason I ask about how many of you have principals that sign the checks. I learned to appreciate the fact that I didn't have to worry about paying the bills. Someone else did that. However, remember that the principal's function primarily is to administrate the policies that the board develops. Okay, the board is not responsible to see to it that they're carried out, more than to communicate directly to the principal and then expect him to carry it out. Now, why is that important? For one thing, many times a principal or a teacher, especially those that have been in your school for more than 3 to 5 years, they're going to have a heart for what they do. In fact, they probably would tell you they feel called of God to be there. Okay, now, every board member I've talked to is very clear on saying, I'm not called of God to be the principal of the school. They don't want it. Well, that's fine. However, it's easy as a board member to become involved in being the principal, because if it's not being done quite right, if there's a complaint, we'll fix that. And you try to fix it rather than going to the principal and helping him solve the problem. So delegate its implementation. Be careful that you don't assume too much. Now, I know that because of budget or whatever, sometimes we have a principal who teaches full-time, so the board simply tries to lighten that load. They know he can't do everything, and I think that's wonderful. You have to work at that. Just be aware that you're crossing some lines, and it takes more communication because you're doing it that way rather than less. You need to work harder at developing that relationship and making sure that things are working smoothly and people feel good about what's happening and it's being done in the best possible way. And then finally, the board's job is to make the administrator successful. It's devastating to have a board who's out there, and I've not experienced this, but I've known principals who have a board who's out there not communicating, saying negative things once in a while about you, and you're catching it from both sides. And if anyone. Okay, let me just give you the concluding notes here just to wrap this up. Again, you bring who you are to the board, good or bad, personal qualifications. You need to learn about the purpose and mission of the school. Why are we here? You need to be zealous in building the board-principal relationship. That is such a key relationship. Let me just read to you the first paragraph out of this book, Serving God on the Christian School Board. The key relationship in the administration of the school is the board-principal relationship. This relationship bears the heaviest brunt of satanic opposition against the school. It must be carefully nurtured. It requires a spiritually mature application of biblical ethics by each continuously. So easy to see that undermined. And then pray. I think we need to remember that this is a spiritual focused endeavor of the kingdom of God. I like to quote the verse that we find in Malachi 4:6, prophesying about John the Baptist's work, saying that he will turn the hearts of fathers to their children and the hearts of the children to the fathers. And the angel quoted that same passage to Zechariah when he said that John the Baptist's work will be to turn the hearts of fathers to their children and to turn many to righteousness. So children are extremely important in what we in the kingdom of God, and we need to be careful that we give that the attention or energy it needs.
For the most current Faith Builders recordings, visit christianlearning.org. And for more free resources that support teaching and learning, visit the docforlearning.org.